Chapter 24 of The House of Whispers by William Lacroix. When Greek Meets Greek. On their left were several white villas, before which pink and scarlet geraniums ran riot, with spreading mimosas golden with their feathery blossom, for Ospedaletti makes a frantic, if vain, bid for popularity as a winter resort. Its deadly dullness, however, is too well known for the habitui of the Riviera, and its casino, which never obtained a license, imparts to it the air of painful effort at gaiety. "Well," remarked the shabby man, as they passed along and out upon the sea road in the direction of Bordighera, "I always looked upon what the people at Acteradar said regarding the Whispers as a mere myth. But now, having heard them with my own ears, how can I have further doubt?"
"I've listened in the castle ruins a good many times, my dear Crail," replied the other, "but I've never heard anything more exciting than an owl.
Indeed, Lady Heyburn and I, when there was so much gossip about the strange noises some 2 years ago, set to work to investigate. We went there at least a dozen times, but without result. Only both of us caught bad colds."
"Well," exclaimed Crail, "I used to ridicule the weird stories I heard in the village about the Devil's Whisper, and all that. But by mere chance, I happened to be at the spot one bright night, and I heard distinct whisperings, just as had been described to me. They gave me a very creepy feeling, I can assure you."
"Bosh! Now, do you believe in ghosts, you man of the world that you are, my dear Felix?"
"No, most decidedly I don't."
"Then what you've heard is only an imagination. Depend upon it, the supernatural doesn't exist in Glencardine, that's quite certain," declared Flockhart. "The fact is that there's so much tradition and legendary lore connected with the old place, and its early owners were such a set of bold and defiant robbers, that for generations the peasantry have held it in awe. Hence all sorts of weird and terrible stories have been invented and handed down, until the present age believes them to be based upon fact. But, my dear friend, I actually heard the whispers, heard them with my own ears," Crail asserted. "I happened to be about the place that night trying to get a peep into the library, where Goslin and the old man were, I believe, busy at work, but the blinds fitted too closely so that I couldn't see inside. The keeper and his men were, I knew, down in the village. Therefore I took a stroll towards the ruins. And as it was a beautiful night, I sat down in the courtyard to have a smoke. Then of a sudden I heard low voices quite distinctly. They startled me, for not until they fell upon my ears did I recall the stories told to me weeks before. If Stewart or any of the underkeepers had found you prowling about the castle grounds at that hour, they might have asked you awkward questions," remarked Flockhart.
"Oh," laughed the other, "they all knew me as a visitor to the village, fond of walking exercise. I took very good care that they should all know me, so that as few explanations as possible would be necessary. As you well know, the secret of all my successes is that I never leave anything to chance."
"To go peeping outside the house and trying to look in at lighted windows sounds a rather injudicious proceeding," his companion declared.
"Not if proper precautions are taken, as I took them. I was weeks in that terribly dull Scotch village, but nobody suspected my real mission. I made quite a large circle of friends at the Star, who all believed me to be a foreign ornithologist writing a book upon the birds of Scotland. Trust me to tell people a good story."
"Well," exclaimed Flockhart after a long silence, "those whispers are certainly a mystery, more especially if you've actually heard them. On two or three occasions, I've spoken to Sir Henry about them. He ridicules the idea. Yet he admitted to me one evening that the voices had really been heard. I declared that the most remarkable fact was the sudden death of each person who had listened and heard them. It is a curious phenomenon, which certainly should be investigated.
The inference is that I, having listened to the ghostly voices, am doomed to a sudden and violent end," remarked the shabby stranger quite gloomily. Flockhart laughed.
"Really, Felix, this is too funny," he said. "Fancy your taking notice of such old wives' fables.
Why, my dear fellow, you've got many years of constant activity before you. You must return to Paris in the morning and watch in patience.
I have watched, but discovered nothing.
Perhaps I'll come and assist you. Most probably I shall.
No, don't. As soon as you leave San Remo, Sir Henry will know, and he might suspect.
Suspect what?
That you are in search of the truth and of fortune in consequence.
He believes in me. Only the other day I had a letter from him written in Goslin's hand, repeating the confidence he reposes in me.
Exactly. You must remain down here for the present.
Flockhart recollected the puzzling decision of Lady Heyburn and remained silent.
Our chief peril is still the one which has faced us all along, went on the man in the gray hat. The peril that the girl may tell about that awkward affair at Chantilly.
She dare not,
Flockhart assured him quickly. Krail shook his head dubiously.
She's leading a lonely life. Her heart is broken, and she believes herself, as every other young girl does, to be without a future. Therefore, she's brooding over it.
One never knows in such cases when a girl may fling all prudence to the winds, he said. If she did, then nothing could save us.
That's just what her ladyship said the other day, answered Flockhart,
tossing away his cigarette. But you don't know that I hold her irrevocably.
She dare not say a single word.
If she dare, why did she not tell the truth about the safe? Probably because it was all too sudden. She now finds life in that dismal little village intolerable. She's a girl of spirit, you know, and has always been used to luxury and freedom. To live with an old woman in a country cottage away from all her friends must be maddening. No, my dear James, in this you've acted most injudiciously. You are devoid of your usual foresight. Depend upon it. A very serious danger threatens. She will speak.
I tell you she dare not. Rest your mind assured.
She will.
She shall not.
How, pray, can you close her mouth? Asked the foreigner.
Flockhart's eyes met his. In them was a curious expression, almost a glitter.
Krail understood. He shrugged his shoulders, but uttered no word. His gesture was, however, that of one unconvinced. Adventurer as he was, ingenious and unscrupulous, he lived from hand to mouth. Sometimes he made a big coup and placed himself in funds, but following such an event he was open-handed and generous to his friends, extravagant in his expenditure, and very soon found himself under the necessity to exercise his wits in order to obtain the next louis. He had known Flockhart for years as one of his own class. They had first met long ago on board a castle liner homeward bound from Cape Town, where both found themselves playing a crooked game. A friendship begotten of dishonesty had sprung up between them, and in consequence they had thrown in their lot together more than once with considerable financial advantage. The present affair was, however, not much to Krail's liking, and this he had more than once told his friend. It was quite possible that if they could discover the mysterious source of the blind man's wealth, they might, by judiciously levying blackmail through a third party, secure a very handsome income which he was to share with Flockhart and her ladyship. The last named, Krail, had always admitted to be one of the cleverest women he had ever met. His only surprise had been that she, as Sir Henry's wife, was unable to get at the facts which were so cleverly withheld. It only showed, however, that the baronet, though deprived of eyesight, was even more clever than the unscrupulous woman he had so foolishly married.
Krail held Lady Heyburn in distinct distrust. He had once had dealings with her which had turned out the reverse of satisfactory. Instinctively he knew that, in order to save herself, if exposure ever came, she would give him away, without the least compunction. What had puzzled him for several years, and what indeed had puzzled other people, was the reason of the close friendship between Flockhart and the baronet's wife. It was certainly not affection. He knew Flockhart intimately, and had knowledge of his private affairs. Therefore he was well aware of the existence of an unknown and rather insignificant woman to whom he was in secret devoted. No, the bond between the pair was an entirely mysterious one. He knew that on more than one occasion, when Flockhart's demands for money had been a little too frequent, she had resisted and attempted to withdraw from further association with him. Yet by a single word, or even a look,
he could compel her to disgorge the funds he needed, for she had even handed him some of her trinkets to pawn until she could obtain further funds from Sir Henry to redeem them. As they walked together along the white Corniche road, their faces set towards the gorgeous southern afterglow, while the waves lapped lazily on the grey rocks, all these puzzling thoughts recurred to Crail. "Lady Heyburn seems still to remain your very devoted friend," he remarked at last with a meaning smile. "I see from the New York Herald what pleasant parties she gives, and how she is the heart and soul of social merriment in San Remo. By Jove, James, you're a lucky man to possess such a popular hostess as a friend."
"Yes," laughed Flockhart. "Winnie is a regular pal. Without her, I should have been broken long ago. But she's always ready to help me along."
"People have already remarked upon your remarkable friendship," said his friend, "and many ill-natured allegations have been made."
"Oh, yes, I'm quite aware of that, my dear fellow. It has pained me more than enough. You yourself know that, as far as affection goes, I've never in my life entertained a spark of it for Winnie. We were children together and have been friends always."
"Quite so," exclaimed Crail, smiling. "That's a pretty good story to tell the world. But there's a point where mere friendship must break, you know."
"What do you mean?" asked the other, glancing at him in surprise.
"Well, the story you tell other people must be picturesque and romantic. But with me it's just a trifle weak. Lady Heyburn doesn't give her pearls to be pawned, out of mere friendship, you know."
Flockhart was silent. He knew too well that the man walking at his side was as clever an intriguer and as bold an adventurer as ever had moved up and down Europe, working the game in search of pigeons to pluck. His shabbiness was assumed. He had alighted at Bordighera station from the Rapide from Paris, spent the night at a third-rate hotel in order not to be recognized at the Angst or any of the smarter houses, and had met him by appointment to explain the present situation. His remarks, however, were the reverse of reassuring. What did he suspect?
"I don't quite follow you, Crail," Flockhart said. "I meant to imply that if friendship only links you with Lady Heyburn, the chain may quite easily snap," he remarked. He looked at his friend, much puzzled. He could see no point in that observation. Crail read what was passing in the other's mind, and added, "I know, mon cher ami, that affection from her ladyship is entirely out of the question. The gossips are liars, and
Sir Henry himself is quite aware of that. I have already spoken quite plainly and openly to him, and suggested my departure from Glencardine on account of ill-natured remarks by her ladyship's enemies. But he would not hear of my leaving, and pressed me to remain."
Crail looked up at him in blank surprise.
"Well," he said, "if you've been bold enough to do this in the face of gossip, then you're a much cleverer man than I ever took you to be."
For answer, Flockhart took some letters from his breast pocket, selected one written in a foreign hand, and gave it to Crail to read. It was from the Hermit of Glencardine, written at his dictation by Monsieur Goslin, and was couched in the warmest and most confidential terms.
"Look here, James," exclaimed the shabby man, handing back the letter. "I'm going to be perfectly frank with you. Tell me if I speak the truth or if I lie. It is neither affection nor friendship which links your life with that woman's. Am I right?"
Flockhart did not answer for some moments. His eyes were cast upon the ground.
"Yes, Crail," he admitted at last when the question had been put to him a second time. "Yes, Crail, you speak the truth. It is neither affection nor friendship."
End of chapter 24.